2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Anton Bettis with you this morning. We'll be taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning, Ton. Welcome to Memorial Day weekend.
Good morning to you.
Hope you have some fun things planned for the weekend.
Doing the greenhouse show is the main thing.
Hey, that's the fun thing of the weekend,
it
right?
It is.
And I've been doing a lot of planting. I've been out in my yard, and it's just so funny how the season changes so quickly.
It is. We were just a few days ago, it seems like, in the 50s and 60s, and we're, I think, scheduled up to be in the low 90s.
No, we're looking at 80 today.
80s, okay.
So I'm going to enjoy the 80. It looks like low 80s. We're up to almost, 90 next week, though. On Tuesday, we're going to hit probably 90 degrees. So something to keep in mind, right, when you're planting?
Utah spring,
right.
From 50 to 90, and then probably the next week we'll be back down to 50 with a danger of frost.
It's just one of those things. This morning we wanted to start off the show talking about Myrtle Spurge. And I know, Ton, this is something that we have talked about before, but there are people, say, in the St. George area down in southern Utah that are very concerned about the planting of things that you find very commonly in a greenhouse that can be very invasive. So tell us about Myrtle Spurge and what the problem with Myrtle Spurge is.
Well, Myrtle Spurge is a plant that we used for landscaping, and because it was used in areas like a south exposure or on a slope, because it pretty much survives with just rainwater. It fills in and is quite pretty, and it has... they're not really true flowers, but in the spring, the tips of the branches have a yellow flower-looking thing on them that looks quite pretty, and so we planted quite a bit of it. But what we're finding over the last 10 or 15 years is that it's overly adapted to our climate, and it's getting loose by moving up, growing out and moving up our hillsides and crowding out native plants. We also have been finding that the sap that it produces, it's in the Euphorbia family, is toxic. So if you get it on your skin, it can raise blisters and cause some burning. And there's been a few incidences where people may have gone blind by getting sap in their eyes because it's caustic. And so it's one that we do need to get rid of, but you have to wear gloves and be extremely careful when you handle it.
It seems like there should be something on the label of a plant when there is something like this occurring.
Well, and it could have been when it was first introduced. We didn't know. Every once in a while, when you handle perennials all the time, you break branches and things, and someone may have noticed, but the information just may not have been out there, and you don't find out until after the fact. So in Utah, it's actually against the law to sell. And there are some lookalikes out there that so far haven't been as aggressive, but it is, you know, one that we really need to be careful of. And so if people find actual myrtle spurge in a nursery, then a call to the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food, who handles quarantines and bans in a lot of situations, can, they have regulatory authority to come in and confiscate the plants so that they're not planted out. And a lot of times, you know, especially, you know, if it's a new nursery or they have new employees, not everyone has a really strong horticulture background and hasn't had a lot of training. So they just may not know that it's been banned. And so when you go into garden centers, it is fairly common to find seeds or plants that have been put on the state noxious weed list that are against the law, but they slip through quite a bit, and they're oftentimes not caught for several months. And this might be the situation in southern Utah.
Right. This is a really tough one because this is a plant that looks like a beautiful succulent. It's kind of a succulent type looking plant, and it's got the gray green leaves. So it's one that you think, oh, this is really a neat plant. And so I bet people have this in their yard and don't even know that they have it.
I think they do, you know, and it's one of those that was promoted as one of, like, I wouldn't call it original, you know, drought adapted plants, but it's an older one that was sold as such. And so even as I travel around, I've been at the mouth of Sardine Canyon and a lot of our canyons and up on hillsides and even Santa Quinn and Goshen areas in southern Utah County. And you can find this going, you know, growing very rapidly along hillsides in a lot of different areas.
So my mom has this in her yard, and I tried to spray all of it in the, well, I tried in the summer last year. I tried in the fall to kill it with weed killer, and I was out in her yard this past week, and it's pretty happy even after being sprayed with weed killer.
Yes, it has a very waxy leaf. The waxy leaves make it very resistant. And so if you're using a weed killer like Roundup, you want to use a spreader sticker, and that may increase penetration into the leaves.
Otherwise, how do you get rid of it?
Dig it out. You want to wear gloves and get a shovel, and I'd water the area down the day before to make it easier, because it can have a very thick stem going into the ground, but if you shovel it out, that usually will eliminate it.
And wear glasses or something over your eyes.
Yeah, safety and glasses and a long sleeve shirt, and just be very cautious.
All right. And if folks would like to know more about myrtle spurge, they can find an article and a picture right now on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take a break, come back with your calls and your questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, and thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Anton with you this morning. Taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. And let's go to our phone lines, and Paul is in Sandy. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Maria Anton. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I have some problems with some Japanese maples, ribbon leaf maples. I've got five of them. One or two are green and three are red. My newest red Japanese maple I planted 6 years ago, and it had three trunks on it. This year I find that one whole trunk died. My Japanese maples that have come out and leafed, the leaves there are about 50% of what they usually are. I have a green Japanese maple that has two big 6-foot-long branches on it that are totally deep dark brown, no leaves. And all of the Japanese maples have a lot of branches that are light gray and no leaves. Could that be a disease, or are my trees just dying?
It could be both. Last year was a very tough winter. I guess I should say last winter was very tough on many different plants that especially are not completely adapted to the Wasatch Front. And so one of the first trees that you're going to see environmental stress in are Japanese maples, especially the lace leaf maples like you have. And so it's really common, especially among lace leaf maples, to have them healthy for 4, 5, maybe 10 years, and then all of a sudden you have a dead trunk. And you've done nothing wrong. It's just that the drought last year, the lack of moisture, the dry air is really rough on them, where they're native to a climate more similar to Portland or Seattle, where there's cooler weather, acidic soil, and more humidity. And so they may have something like verticillium or another disease in them that clogs their vascular tissue, but it also could just be environmental damage.
Now then, should I take my larger branches that are dead, some of them are 2 inches thick, should I just cut those off, or should I give them a chance to get through to maybe next year or the year after?
They're not going to leaf out if they have not. You would need someone with more spiritual chutzpah than me to perform a miracle healing on them or something. If they're dead, they're dead. And so you may as well just, if you know they're not going to leaf out and they don't within the next couple of weeks, go ahead and cut them out.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you very much. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you so much for calling this morning. Our first texter, Ton, says they sprayed their apples for moths last night, and they want to know, should they be drenching the whole tree and trunk and the ground, or just the apples themselves?
You want to mainly spray the apples, but as you do that, if you do a good job, you can't help but getting, you know, the spray on a lot of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to be out there with a little spray bottle detail spraying it. I think that it's going to be much more, it's going to save a lot of time by just spraying the tree and focusing on the apples. You don't need to spray the limbs and trunk. It's just the apples, but you naturally just get the spray on them. Now, there's lots of organic options out there if you want to use the reduced risk, you know, options out there, but there's also more conventional that you can use too.
Are moths a big problem? I think of moths as just being, you know, not a problem.
The larvae are what are the problem. And so coddling moth will come in from outside of Utah, but it also overwinters here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just a little gray, nondescript moth, but they lay eggs on apples and pears and then some other close relatives. And so when you bite into an apple and it's wormy, it's the coddling moth larvae that have caused that.
Okay. The next question is one that we get all the time. And I think, so how do they keep their neighbors' dogs and cats from doing their duty in their yard and flower beds? It's one of those problems. We live on a corner, and this is a big problem. And I want to say to this person, you need to ask them not to do that.
You really do. It's against the law for people to have their animals out, not contained, either on a leash or in a fenced yard.
Well, they're even on a leash sometimes, Tom.
Are they? And they don't bother to clean it up.
No.
You know, I had a close relative who had a neighbor whose dog would do that every morning on his lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was a little extreme, but he collected the waste and put it in a bag in the freezer in his garage that I guess wasn't being used, and saved it for 2 or 3 months, and then went and dumped it all on their neighbor's porch one
morning. Let me just say, that's an awful idea. Please don't do
that. It is. We're not recommending this, but for some reason the dog didn't go to the bathroom in his yard anymore after the fact. So that was pretty extreme. But, you know, if it's not possible, if they're strays or their situations, exclusion is about the only thing that you can really resort to that is humane and legal. But a conversation with a neighbor is the first step. And if that doesn't work, then a call to authorities would be the next step. And you would want to have pictures of this occurring, because you do need like smoking gun level evidence for this to really stick if you're going to call the police or the pound or something.
Well, and besides the stuff that's left over, oftentimes people think it's just okay to let their dog, you know, pee on their, you know, corner or whatever.
Yeah, and that ruins portions of your lawn, or it can over time make the soil toxic for growing plants because of the salts and a few other things in there. And so it's really just not a good thing to let your pet out not on a leash to go to the bathroom and then think it's okay.
Right. We really try. And we have a dog, so I'm not saying I'm perfect, because sometimes that happens with us. But we do carry around a bag and we clean up. But sometimes I can't help where he decides to mark his spot. That's a problem.
Yes. But I have noticed that most cities have started putting in bags, stations in their city parks with free bags that you can clean up after your animals, just out of courtesy to everyone. And it's becoming easier and easier if you're walking a pet, especially using city-owned facilities, to have, you know, clean up after them.
Right. Let's take a call from Jim in Riverdale this morning. Good morning, Jim.
Hi. Last spring, a year ago spring, we got a trampoline, and we had it in the backyard, and I was amazed that the grass in a very sunny spot kept growing very well. But this spring, when things started to come out of hibernation, that area was dying off, and it seemed to have powdery mildew. I don't see signs of powdery mildew, but there's still a lot of damage. I'm just wondering, do I need to treat it for powdery mildew, and how do I get that lawn area to come back?
Well, if it came out of winter damaged, it wasn't powdery mildew. It was more likely a disease called snow mold.
Uh-huh.
And that's one
despite
where
the fact that there was no snow on the ground.
If it stayed wetter under the trampoline, or cooler and more moist, and if it was just above freezing, you don't have to have snow for snow mold, but it does help. So leaf litter, anything along those lines, it for some reason could be environmental damage. But if it came out of the winter dead, then powdery mildew wasn't what did the damage most likely. So what you would want to do is rake the dead out and see if you have any recovery in there. And if you don't, go ahead and get down to the soil level and reseed or resod that area.
Yeah. There's bits of green throughout it, but still a lot of large dead spots. Just gently rake it. And because I put a pre-emergent on, so seed would
work. You're not going to do any seeding or sodding until that pre-emergent wears off.
Well, sodding doesn't matter about pre-emergent.
It does. It does. It actually does, because pre-emergent prevents rooting, and that's how it kills seeds. And so if you look at a pre-emergent label that's used for lawns, it'll say do not seed or sod for a number of weeks to months, depending on the particular product.
Okay. So the best treatment now is just water it, maybe fertilize it, and try to get what's growing to grow stronger.
Yes, because it's rooted more deeply. The existing tufts of grass that are left, if it's Kentucky bluegrass, will begin to runner out because it's below that pre-emergent layer. It's just if you do new seed or new sod that you will run into problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, Jim, thanks for your call this morning.
You.
We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. And today's lawn care tip is sponsored by Biograss. The number for you to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.